This episode is brought to you in association with Janus Henderson Investors. It is a marketing communication, not for onward distribution, and the value of an investment can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount you originally invested. Past performance does not predict future returns, and nothing in this episode should be construed as advice. Our discussion is for illustrative purposes only. References made to individual securities does not constitute a recommendation to buy, sell or hold any security, investment strategy or market sector, and should not be assumed to be profitable. Janus Henderson Investors, its affiliated advisor or its employees may have a position in the securities mentioned, not for distribution in European Union member countries. My name is Andrew Chiguri, and today I'm joined by Alex Crook, who's the portfolio manager of the Bankers Investment Trust. And today we'll be talking about how the trust has performed so far this year, the role of different managers within the portfolio, and how he's navigating the current market environment. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's been a difficult year for global equity markets. Looking at the first half of the year, stock markets had their worst first half in the last 50 years, and the last 3 months really haven't got any better. How has the trust performed over that period?
Well, clearly it's investing in equities, so it's fallen in value. You know, our job is to try and anticipate the better equities, which are going to fall a bit less, but it's very difficult to sort of pull everything out and sell for cash. Now, we have reduced what we call as leverage, so we've reduced some of the borrowings that we use to invest in markets, and clearly we've been a lot more defensively minded, which I think we have been for 2 years. We've been, you know, talking mildly about inflation likely to change the dynamic of the market. We've seen for 10 years it's all been around really interest rates falling. That's driven up what we call growth investments, so investments that have sort of more long-term characteristics. They're investing for the future, maybe burning cash today, but, you know, creating value in the future. And the value of those shares has been very high. Now, we've been trying to avoid those. We've said, look, they're very expensive. Now is not the time. And we've been talking about inflation picking up. Now, the challenge really has been that when we were talking about inflation, it was about a labor market that was very tight. So we saw, you know, very few opportunities for increased labor. So you have to pay up for labor. So we saw wages growing. And as wages grow, you tend to see consumption spending increase and inflation pick up. What we and, you know, clearly most commentators really didn't see was the Russian invasion of the Ukraine, which again, you think, you know, well, what effects is that going to have? Clearly huge effects on economies in terms of the price of energy and then maybe the price of all the derivatives of what you use energy for, fertilizer, which you use on fields, et cetera, et cetera. But then also COVID, which again was interesting to model in initially, that we'd never seen a shutdown of the world. Yeah. So the effects again of reopening led to another inflation surge in terms of transport of goods and availability, which pushed up prices. So it's been, as you say, in 50 years, we've not seen inflation surge quite like this, apart from the mid-70s. And the effects on markets, yes, initially have been very negative.
I mean, we'll come back on the performance of value and growth stocks in a second, but have you made any key changes to the trust over the first half of the year?
So I think, first of all, you know, reducing some of the exposure to some of the higher growth names. So where we just see in life, particularly, it's more about the valuation of these shares. As, you know, the companies themselves are doing okay and some of them are growing. But if the market is going to say, well, I'm not going to price value these shares in the same way, then you can see share prices halving and actually earnings stay the same with expectations. So that's going through the portfolio and trying to see where the risk is to some of the valuations that are being paid and therefore trying to remove some of those names. We've also been selling some of what we call consumer discretionary stocks. So this is where, you know, probably bigger ticket items, so cars, autos, holidays, you know, things that can be deferred if spending is tough. So we've been removing some of those names, keeping non-discretionary, which again is things that just keep, you know, consumers keep spending on or must spend on. And then also looking as well, I think, through the UK portfolio, which has been very strong, relatively speaking, but it's full of a lot of defensive and utilities and energy stocks, which have done well for us. And so maybe there's an opportunity to recycle some of that money into the areas of the market that have fallen a bit more sharply, particularly Asia.
Those who might not know, the trust invests across 6 regions, and each of them are run by a regional specialist with different investment styles. How does that work exactly, and how do you ensure that each manager is contributing to the overall mandate of the trust?
Yeah, so there's two aspects there. One is an allocation stance, so that's principally my role of saying, well, where should we put our money for the next 2 or 3 years to get the best investment opportunities? And so it may be into the US, it may be into China, maybe into Japan. So the regional allocations there can be made. We're trying to obviously generate the best return, and markets are volatile. So it's always a bit more difficult. You'll never get the lows, you'll never get the right moment. But by thinking maybe a year or two out, you know, we can therefore have a little bit more clarity where the value and the growth opportunities lie. You know, historically, the last 10 years, it's been very US focused. You know, US has got a lot of technology names, so it's had the stock market has been very strong, and the US economy has actually been stronger than most other markets. We're coming through a period maybe in the next 2 or 3 years where we're seeing weakness in Europe, because of the energy crisis we've talked about. So we've been reducing that in terms of UK and Europe. But I think maybe there's an opportunity into Asia where we might see more stimulation, I think, to get the economy going. They still haven't recovered from COVID properly. So there's opportunities there. And then when we look at each of the managers, we're asking them to pick maybe 20, 25 stocks in their region that they think will outperform that stock market, and trying to give us some differentiation from the major indices.
You touched on value and growth there, but with value continuing to outperform growth at the moment, how do you then tilt the portfolio? Because some of the managers have got a growth or a style tilt, so to speak.
Growth has worked better in certain markets, particularly the US, over long, long periods of time. And value as a style, I think we have to be very careful, because value essentially is just saying, cheaper stocks than the market average. And there's always a good reason for stocks being cheap, and they're out of favour, or it's a perception of investors that industry or that company's dynamics are failing and are likely to be very challenged. So you're buying, situations that are unloved. So I think, you've got to be careful saying that's my consistent, I'm always buying unloved situations, because you need an amazing hit rate to make consistent amount of money. So there's always going to be some great growth names, some names that have just got great market share, or they're just great innovators, and you want to hold some of those. And then there are times you want to own more of the unloved stocks. And the big segment of unloved at the moment has been financials for the last few years, and driven by regulations, but principally very low interest rates. It's very difficult to make money out of deposits or insurance products when the cost of money is zero. Yeah. And that is changing. So there's a big dynamic of what we think of value, that financial segment. Not all of them will win. There's still fintech and challenger banks, all sorts of opportunities to challenge it. But I think financials as a whole is likely to do well. But other areas of value we want to probably stay away from.
I think it's interesting that you touched on financials there. Because, with markets now pricing in a recession, for example, you could see higher loan delinquencies or defaults alongside bankruptcies from businesses because, there's a cost of living crisis and consumers are struggling. I mean, surely that kind of environment is bad for financial stocks.
It is challenging, but that they're priced for this. So you're paying very little for the assets of the business, and in paying very little, a very low valuation, you're assuming that yes, bad debts rise. But on the other side of that, the clients, it's a very, the core business is very sticky, as it were. Credit cards get used, cash gets borrowed, and borrowings, generally are paid back. Very few borrowings actually are defaulted upon. Our view of this recessionary cycle is it's a squeeze on spending, but it's less likely to be a big, lead to a lot of job losses. Mm-hmm. Because, as I said, governments will help out. I think the US market is likely to be a much softer landing or a modest recession. So if we're not seeing a lot of job losses, we shouldn't see a lot of delinquencies. Mm-hmm. And I think the market's already pricing in quite a harsh environment for the banks. And don't forget, the cash deposits will start to earn ever more incremental amounts of money. Their core business, they sit on a lot of cash.
Yeah.
Insurers, banks, the business is founded on a big cash float. And that should earn incrementally more as rates go up.
In our previous episode, you spoke about inflation and we spoke about companies being able to pass down those higher input costs. Is that still the case? Are companies still able to pass down those rising costs to consumers, or are margins getting squeezed tighter and tighter as the year progresses?
I mean, I have to say, over the summer, we've not seen that squeeze on what we call it volume, so the amount of things that they sell. The prices have gone up and consumers have tended to pay the price, and companies. Now, that can't go on forever. So I think, again, the market is telling you that by share prices.
Yeah.
falling, that we're going to see some demand destruction. We're going to see some people just not buying as much stuff or trading down. Now, the trading down we're clearly seeing. So, you know, consumers are looking for better value in their purchases. So the more discounters and the low-cost operators are seeing a better side of the business than the higher. But it is going to be, I think, you know, we're looking forward in the glass ball, as it were, the looking glass here, and trying to understand just how far it goes. And yeah. I think it historically, yes, margins will have to come down. But share prices are factoring a lot of that in.
The Fed has said that it will keep at it until the job is done. And that's regarding inflation. Now, consequently, that has raised the odds of a recession, with some predicting a hard landing. How do you prepare a portfolio for such an environment?
Well, say it's about trying to make sure that the companies we invest in are good quality. So and in quality we mean they're not too they don't have excessive borrowings. So again, if you're going to see lower margins or lower volumes, you know, you don't want to be continuing to pay very high levels of interest for deposits, because that's for loans, that's where life gets difficult. So looking for resilience, businesses that can, you know, weather this environment for the next year. And are likely to come out winners, so they're lower cost producers, or they're able to put prices up. So it's trying to look at resilient businesses that are not too stressed, and equally, you know, trying to avoid the other areas of the market that are likely to see pricing pressure. Yeah. Ultimately, it's very difficult to avoid all this, and we have to sort of be aware of that, but not be in a position where when we come out of this, and I think economies will bounce quite quickly. You know, the energy crisis, you could see ways of it easing quite dramatically next year, and governments are stepping in. So, you know, one shouldn't be too defensive, that markets could respond quite quickly. And we've seen historically, all it takes is an easing of pressure or an easing in the bad news. It doesn't necessarily need good news. It just needs you to think it's not getting worse. Yeah. And that's, we've seen some of that in the US market over the summer. There is a groundswell that US inflation has peaked. You know, the July, August figures could have been the top. Now, whether it comes back sharply, and the reason here is US has got, you know, is priced in dollars, so they're not seeing quite the steepness in terms of energy prices. It's not reliant on European gas. You know, they generate their own energy, and so there's lots of reasons to think the US may have peaked. Now, interest rates, the Fed is always going to say rates are going to keep, they need to have quite a lot of bark in here to remind people to not go back to spending lots of money. So I think, you know, we may have seen some of the worst in the US, you know, but we'll have to see how the coming months go.
Looking at the US, you have about 37% of the portfolio allocated to the US. However, unlike other trusts within your sector, that exposure is not dominated by tech stocks. As we've seen earlier on this year, the tech sector has obviously gone through a significant re-rating. Have tech valuations become more reasonable now? And what do you need to see before you can consider or increase your exposure to that space again?
So historically, we've had plenty of tech ideas, and it's just over the last 2 years, we just got more and more challenged on the valuations as they've got higher and higher. You know, the opportunity in owning them gets more risky. And we've seen that in the last 12 months as, you know, those prices have rolled over in a lot of sectors. So definitely they are getting more affordable, without a shadow of doubt, and there's still lots of innovation going on. So there's some very interesting companies doing some fascinating things in the market. So definitely the opportunity set is opening up. You know, is it now the time to reverse that? Not yet, because as I always said, I think we need to have a little bit more confidence in US rates sort of peaking and rolling over. So we're bound to get quarters and months where some of those tech ideas are more in favour. But I do think, you know, looking forward, we're going to see a more rational market of evaluating just how far out does this innovation come and what we're prepared to pay for it. I think life will get harder for those companies raising money from private equity and other sources, and that's their lifeblood. You know, they grow as a private company. And they're consuming cash. So if price of cash is rising, it's going to get harder to have that lifeblood, as it were, before they hit the public markets. So, you know, we'll keep plenty of tech ideas. We've got some great ones in the portfolio, but I think it'll just be a more modest amount of the portfolio relative to some other segments.
I mean, I think one of the names within the portfolio is Microsoft, which has been, you know, a long-term core holding within the portfolio. You know, what is it that you like about Microsoft, and, you know, why has it retained a place within the portfolio for so many years?
I think there's a couple of aspects. One is, you know, it's a company that's been, you know, relatively bold in terms of continuing to make acquisitions to grow key parts of the business. So when you look at it, in its early days, it was an operating system, you know, and making good money there. But they were innovative enough to know, well, that wasn't enough, and that the market share, you know, there could be opportunities for people to eat into that market share. So then they developed, you know, new products like Excel and Word and applications that we all now, you know, are core to what we do. So they innovated, and they bought some of these businesses, and then into browsers, which again they developed. And we've seen them in the last few years into both bits of hardware. They tried mobile phones, didn't work, but other areas of hardware are working quite well. And then ultimately the cloud and Azure, their business, going on into the data, into the cloud. So I just like the management, you know, use the cash flow that the core business generates to continue to think about growth opportunities and how the world will change. And they're not the most innovative, but they're very good, I think, allocators of that capital. And what we also get is a very nice dividend. So not only do we get earnings growth, it's a company that's prepared to give some of that cash they generate back to investors. So I like that mix of both growth and income in this stock. Yeah.
Though performance over the short term has been challenging, the trust has a strong capital and income record over the long term. Let's say you have a crystal ball. How do you see the market playing out over the next year or so? And what is your outlook for dividends over that period as well?
So maybe starting with the dividends. I mean, dividends are a function of corporate earnings. You know, if you're not growing your earnings, then it's difficult to grow your dividend. That's some do, but most will either hold the dividend or in extreme cases cut it. Now, I've said we're looking for good quality names that are not under pressure from too much borrowing, but therefore we will be a function of earnings growth will affect dividends. Now, some segments, I said, maybe financials actually accelerate some of their income if they start to do better. So I think the trust has a mandate to grow its income, its dividends above inflation over the long term. Clearly this year with inflation at 10% or so, it's quite a challenging point to grow it. We've already forecast a minimum of about 5% growth in the dividend this year. We'll see how the second half goes. But I still feel confident in that long-term view that earnings of corporates grow quicker than the economy and grow quicker than inflation over time. But we may be just, you know, struggling to keep up in this current year. But the outlook is still positive. The other aspect we've got is we pay our dividends in sterling. And as I said earlier, I think the US dollar has been very strong. So a lot of our international stocks that either use dollars or function in dollars or they're US listed have actually done well. We'll see a higher level of income from them. So there's some positives to come through there. So I'm not bearish on dividends over the future. And I think they will reconnect with some decent growth as economies respond and recover. I think in the short term, we'd like to continue to see a difficult winter in terms of consumer spending. But governments are, as they learned in COVID, are stepping in now, I think, to try and protect the vulnerable, certainly in their communities, and consumers in general, I think, be less help for businesses. But that should have some effects on the energy prices, I think, and economies. So I think we're still difficult winter, definitely. But I think the markets are pricing in a lot of these challenges, and I'm expecting, you know, we may have seen the lows in markets. You know, whether we get consistent growth, probably not. You tend to see a year or so of markets maybe marking time, going up, coming back, going up before you get some more consistent growth coming. But you know, the world is still innovating. Yeah. We've got some great investments we own, and I'm pretty confident over the next 4 or 5 years we'll see some good, very interesting opportunities to invest in.
Great. Well, that's all we have time for today. Alex, thank you for joining.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share this with anyone you think will also find this interesting. If you want to learn more about investment trusts, we have a wealth of information available on our website, which you can find in the show notes.
Important information, not for onward distribution. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved. You may wish to consult a financial advisor. This is a marketing communication. Please refer to the AIFMD disclosure document and the annual reports of the AIF before making any final investment decisions. Past performance does not predict future returns. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount you originally invested. Tax assumptions and reliefs depend upon an investor's particular circumstances and may change if those circumstances or the law change. Nothing in this podcast is intended to or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. We may record telephone calls for our mutual protection, to improve customer service, and for the regulated record keeping purposes. Issued in the UK by Janus Henderson Investors. Janus Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janus Henderson Investors International Limited. Reg number 3594615. Janus Henderson Investors UK Limited. Reg number 906355. Janus Henderson Fund Management UK Limited. Reg number 2678531. Henderson Equity Partners Limited, Reg number 2606646. Each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate in London, EC2M3AE, and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. And Henderson Management S.A, Reg number B22848. At 2 Rue de Bitbourg, L1273, Luxembourg, and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier. Janus Henderson, Knowledge Shared and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janus Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janus Henderson Group PLC.
Grow stocks. A growth stock is any share in a company that is anticipated to grow at a rate significantly above the average growth for the market. These stocks generally do not pay dividends. This is because the issuers of growth stocks are usually companies that want to reinvest any earnings they accrue in order to accelerate growth in the short term. When investors invest in growth stocks, they anticipate that they will earn money through capital gains when they eventually sell their shares in the future. Leverage, gearing, the use of borrowing to increase exposure to an asset/market. This can be done by borrowing cash and using it to buy an asset, or by using financial instruments such as derivatives to simulate the effect of borrowing for further investment in assets. Value stocks. A value stock refers to shares of a company that appears to trade at a lower price relative to its fundamentals, such as dividends, earnings, or sales, making it appealing to value investors.